This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Good morning, everybody. This is the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Jefferson Smith, sitting in, and honored to do so. Today, the big question. Several of them, in fact. We will cover the Supreme Court. I will ask at least four questions, and I will have at least four answers with respect to the Supreme Court. Who will be the Supreme Court pick? Will the nominee be confirmed? How could Mitch McConnell be so inconsistent? And what can progressives do to block conservative judicial nominations? And to tease my four answers very briefly. Answer to the first question, one out of four. Second question, almost certainly yes. Third question answer, there's a lesson in the World Cup. And fourth question answer, Carnegie Hall. We'll be covering that in depth in the second hour. But right now, I want to ask you what you think the big question is. Imagine there were a government of greed. Imagine there were a government whose purpose was selfishness for itself, for its leader, for its core constituents, and by that I mean donors, for the wealthiest and most economically powerful among us. Let us imagine hypothetically, or not so hypothetically, that such a government existed. What might that government do? And where would it stop? What wouldn't it do? What's something that you previously thought inconceivable that now we have to conceive of, either because it's happening or because we actually think we need to be prepared for it perhaps happening? I used to think it was somewhat inconceivable that a majority party, not in votes but in Congress, would be in favor of suppressing votes. I used to think that was somewhat inconceivable. I used to think that cutting health care benefits that people already had would be somewhat inconceivable. I used to think that going after the Voting Rights Act would be almost beyond conception. Would a government of greed do those things? Here's one that never dawned on me. It never occurred to me. It never occurred to me that any government, of greed or otherwise, would be opposed to mother's milk. And I'm talking about that, yes, before the Supreme Court. I would love your thoughts about what you think the big question is. And of course, we'll talk about the Supreme Court today. But I wanted to start out with mother's milk because now I remember Dan Quayle and I remember Murphy Brown and I remember the government with significant ties to the government now making the case that there was such a thing called family values that the government was supposed to protect. And I thought at the time, even as a much younger person, that that was an argument cloaking oppression, cloaking other arguments. But I at least thought they'd have to be mildly internally consistent as they built that movement. It never occurred to me that that movement, a government of greed or otherwise, would be opposed to mother's milk. And you say, what are you talking about, Jeff? Where's Tom Hartman? He would never make such a crazy claim. Ah, but wait, he might, because it's true. Did you see this story? There was a meeting at the World Health Assembly. There was a meeting of international delegates and a resolution to promote breastfeeding in unindustrialized nations and in nations generally, promoting the health benefits of breastfeeding. I saw an article that I thought it wasn't funny enough to be an Onion article. I assumed it was fake news, so I waited until I found four sources before I believed it and decided to pass it along. And it turned out, the article actually in Axios said the United States. I'm not going to call it the United States. I'm going to call it the Trump administration. Because I think if you ask the United States, and by that I include the fair, fine, wonderful, kind people who are giving us and sharing with us some time this morning, I believe if you were asked this question, you would not say, you would not be opposed to mother's milk. You would be in favor of breastfeeding as something that is healthy to do. Not required, not a law that would ban other kinds of ways to feed children, but just saying, hey, breastfeeding is a cool thing to do. Well, Axios said the United States, I will say the Trump administration is blocking that resolution. And the reason why, do you know why? The reason why is because the makers of baby formula want to make sure they can sell their baby formula. And they don't even have really great health arguments. There's no even really great policy argument except for raw power. To me, the big question includes, and where I want to start, is if there were a government of greed, if selfishness and reward for the wealthiest among us were in fact the purpose, speaking hypothetically or not, how far would that government of greed go? What's something that you used to think you couldn't imagine a government doing, you couldn't imagine the current party in power doing, that now seems to be happening, or that we should be prepared for because it might happen? We welcome your calls. The call-in number is 202-808-9925. It's 202-808-9925. What's your big question? And my first big question is, where would a government of greed go? Where might it not stop where you used to think it might stop? Let me say something about the Supreme Court, because I know people are champing at the bit to talk about it. And yes, by the way, it's champing, not chomping. And it's stamping grounds, not stomping grounds. Horses don't chomp on bits, and children do not stomp around on the grounds. This is something pedantic and not that relevant, but I find it mildly interesting. My four questions on the Supreme Court were, one, who will be the Supreme Court pick? Two, will the nominee be confirmed? Three, how could Mitch McConnell be so inconsistent as to build an entire blockage argument of Merrick Garland around, well, you can't do this during an election year, and then not give it a whisper during this election year? And four, what can progressives do to block conservative judicial appointments? As I said, my four quick answers are 1 out of 4, 2, almost certainly yes, 3, there's a lesson in the World Cup, and 4, Carnegie Hall. First, 1 of 4. We will talk in the second hour about the four nominations. The four finalists, if you will, the names that have been floated and continued to stay above water. And we will talk about those in the second hour. You might have thoughts and questions about them. Answer to the second question, will they be confirmed? The reason I'm not dwelling on the names, the reason I am not treating this as the final rose ceremony of the Supreme Court bachelorette, is that I think the answer to the second question, will they be confirmed, is almost certainly yes. The third, how could Mitch McConnell be so internally inconsistent? How could the governing party block and swipe away the Barack Obama appointment of Merrick Garland and not see that at all as hypocritical or internally inconsistent with, in this election year, naming somebody? And I've been thinking about the World Cup, and I think it's just like that. Or at least a little bit like this. Have you noticed in football, in international soccer, that there seem to be a lot of guys who fall over when they don't need to fall over? And when they fall over, they scream and yelp. And after they've screamed and yelped for a while, they get up and seem to be running around just fine. The NBA calls it flopping. Soccer sort of calls it flopping sometimes too. You're not supposed to do it. In fact, it's considered cheating, but it happens all the time. They break a rule all the time. They break a competitive principle all the time. No soccer player, if you were asked, would you say, well, it's an honorable football behavior to fall over and you've been touched in the box approaching a goal? No, none of them would say yes. They do it all the time. How come? Because goals are precious. As you've seen in the World Cup games, they're finishing, and don't worry, I won't use sports metaphors that often, but the World Cup is happening all around the world right now. You've seen games 1-1, 2-1, 1-0 as among the most common scores. If you can get that one goal, if you draw a red card and that eliminates an opponent, if you can draw that foul, that penalty in the penalty box and get a penalty kick and have, what, a 75% chance of scoring, 80% chance of scoring, that one goal could be the whole thing. And therefore, players will cheat. They will writhe around on the ground or not that injured. They will fall when they've barely been touched. They will do things that do not comport with their own competitive values or with the rules of the game because they know that goal is precious. So too is a Supreme Court seat. People live longer now than they did when the Constitution was drafted, 20 years longer. Now we can anticipate a Supreme Court justice working into their 80s. Meanwhile, movement conservatives, and more than that, have now recognized that you don't have to wait till somebody's in their 60s to appoint them. If you appoint someone in their late 40s, and they keep at it until their 80s, you have 30 or 40 years of a goal, of a precious asset. And so it's worth it to the person who is not playing a game for principle, is not playing a game for the purpose of the rules, but in fact only for victory, only for power. It is worth it to them to violate those rules, to violate those norms at the very least, to violate their own competitive principles, because now Donald Trump is going to have two nominations in less than 2 years, as many as Barack Obama had in eight. Well, he had three, but only got two to stick. And it's very precious. What can progressives do to block judicial appointments? I said the answer was Carnegie Hall. What did I mean? Old joke. Sir, how do you get to Carnegie Hall? Answer, practice, practice, practice. How do you block a Supreme Court appointment? You start early. You win elections. You build a movement. You identify after Brown versus Board of Education that the court needs to change, and you build a movement to that. The reason I'm not starting only with analysis of who is going to be picked and whether or not they are going to get confirmed is I believe they will be confirmed. And I believe whomever it is appointed is going to be the justice you hope, or I suspect if you're a listener to this program, you fear will be confirmed. And that most of that court watching happening right now is a cat chasing a laser, is a gnat having a lifespan of a winter's day and thinking the world was always cold, and that we need to take a long view. We're going to come back in just a minute. And when we're back, I want to hear your big question. If you want to talk about the Supreme Court, that's fine, but we got calls coming in. We're going to hear from Ann on Mother's Milk and others. This is the Tom Hartman Show. I'm Jeff.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is the Tom Hartman Show. I'm Jeff. Happy summer. We're on Free Speech TV. I'm Jefferson Smith sitting in for Tom. We're going to go to Thomas calling from Las Cruces. Framing today is the big question. Supreme Court's on people's minds. I want to go broader and deeper than that, including talking about mother's milk and what are the limits that a government of greed might go. Thomas, what do you want to talk about? Thomas, you there? Oh. We don't have Thomas. The article here that I am looking at, the Trump administration threatening Ecuador over its support of the breastfeeding resolution on behalf of, at the behest of, manufacturers of fake mother's milk. This spring at the World Health Assembly, the United States fought a resolution to encourage breastfeeding. The New York Times just came out with the report. Government delegates had expected the resolution to be approved swiftly and presumably unanimously. Patty Runbaugh, the policy director at the British advocacy group Baby Milk Action, told the Times that what occurred was tantamount to blackmail. The United States holding the world hostage, trying to overturn nearly 40 years of consensus on the best way to protect infant and young child health. The United States delegation tried to water down language in the resolution. When that didn't work, they began to threaten and bully countries who are supporting the resolution. I have thoughts about this. I think you do, too. Let's hear from Marcia. Marcia, can you hear me?
Yep, I hear you.
Great. Welcome you wanted back, to talk about Jeff. The Supreme Court. Go ahead.
Okay. The first item I want to mention on the breast milk, there isn't a single mammal on this earth to which the babies do not absolutely flatly depend on their mother's milk. Any baby whose mother has been killed prematurely before they finish their breastfeeding cycle and goes on formula by these well-meaning rescue centers never do as well as the baby that's raised on the mother's milk. And that's because of all the antibodies that the mother has. And human beings are among that group. Mother's milk is essential to the well-being of a baby.
Mammals, though, Marcia, they don't have access to Similac or Gerber or Enfamil or Nido. I mean, if you are a marsupial, if you are a small bear or a deer, you don't have Nido. All you have is mother's milk. Maybe the reason that they're so dependent on mother's milk is because they haven't had the choice of having fake mother's milk. What say you to that, Marcia?
Well, I'll tell you, I worked for a rescue center that used to take in babies that had lost their mothers, and I've got one in my freezer right now. It's called KMR, and it's a formula that supposedly replaces mother's milk.
And you don't think it replaces it?
It doesn't have the antibodies.
Doesn't have the antibodies, Marcia. Thanks for calling. We'll be right back. This is the Tom Hartman Show. We're bringing you some antibodies. This is the Tom Hartman Show. I'm Jefferson Smith. Big question today, not just Supreme Court, but what limits would a government of greed go past? What things that you previously thought were limits would a government of greed dismiss entirely? For instance, we're talking about mother's milk. And so is Ann from Albuquerque. Ann, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Good morning.
Good morning. Okay, so yes, we're talking about mother's milk. And I told the person who took my call, I said, can I use the name of a company? And she said, yes. I have been boycotting Nestle ever since my children, who both of whom I nursed, were babies decades ago, because they would introduce women who had babies in third world countries to their formula. And the problem is that when you add a spoonful of white powder to a bottle of water, and who knows where the water came from, out of some stream that probably wasn't clean, and you look at it and you think, well, this looks good, so we can probably use less. Babies were dying of malnutrition because they used less and less formula to make that white liquid, and it wasn't enough to keep the babies alive. And I always thought that they should have helped the women eat properly so they could nurse their babies. Nursing babies is very important, as the previous person said, the antibodies and all that sort of thing. Also, the connection you have with the baby as you nurse it. And I still do not use Nestle products, and both my children are grown up and happy and doing well. But one day, recently, I was in the grocery store and I saw a bag of dark chocolate-covered raisins. And I love both raisins and dark chocolate, so I pulled it off
Me
the
too.
Shelf, bought it. It turned out to be a Nestle product. I threw it away.
I now get my chocolate-covered raisins at a co-op store, at an employee-owned store. I'm not going to plug it, but that's where I... But that's what, well, maybe I can't. Well, no, it's probably not in your town anyway. It's local. I like me some dark chocolate. I try to get the sugar-free ones. Raisins aren't sugar-free, but I try to get the chocolate. Appreciate your call, Ann. Let me ask this, though, Ann. Does it surprise you that this administration blocked the resolution in favor of mother's milk, or is it par for the course?
It's par for the course, but it's an issue that I had really hoped would not come up again. But it doesn't surprise me.
Ann, thanks for calling.
Thank you. Thanks, Jeff. Bye-bye.
You have a good day. Today at 9 p.m. Eastern, the president of these United States, or we can call him the current occupant of the White House, is expected to make his pick for the Supreme Court. I am saying that while the Supreme Court is of enormous consequence, and while progressive voters need to rally in greater magnitude for the long term because of it, which person he picks is of less consequence than the media will treat it. Because this goal has already been scored. This battle has already been won. This building has been built. This flower has been planted. And it was planted decades ago. And what we have to do here this morning, this afternoon on the East Coast, is we have to plant flowers that will last for more than a day or two. This is the Tom Show. I'm Jeff.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925. I'm Jefferson Smith. This is the Tom Hartman Program. We've got callers, and thank you for being among them. Want to hear from Brenda the framing question. I know everybody's talking about the Supreme Court. I think I know that whoever's nominated is going to get confirmed. And if they don't, it's going to motivate conservative voters to turn out in an election they were otherwise not that enthused because Donald Trump is motivating to some fraction but embarrassing to another fraction. So that, to me, is not the most interesting question. To me, it is a really interesting question. How do we understand the current government, and how do we build a movement so that a war on democracy is not a loss for democracy? What are the things that are happening today that are not just interesting to pay attention to from time to time, but that help us in a common moral theme, a common cause and purpose, that can help us motivate and inspire a movement of sufficient movement and duration to beat back a war on democracy? And to me, I think this one was a mistake. I think going after mother's milk was a mistake. I don't think it was merely a moral mistake. Those are happening all the time. I think it was also a strategic mistake. And shout out to the New York Times for finding the story, because, by the way, the blocking of the mother's milk resolution didn't just happen a few days ago. It happened in the spring. The story came out now. So shout out to them. But I think it was a tactical and strategic mistake, because it makes plain, it makes so very plain, that support for family is not the idea. Oppression of women might occasionally be the governing idea of the governing party, but it is not support for family or family health. But if you're making a case that it is a government of greed, blocking breastfeeding, blocking a resolution to encourage it, is the kind of thing that starts stripping away the veneer. I think it was a mistake, not only a moral mistake, but a strategic mistake. Want to hear from Brenda from Atlanta, Georgia. Hey, Brenda. Brenda, you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can. Thank you.
Okay. My point is, I had a daughter. I had a difficult pregnancy. The doctor literally told me if I could breastfeed her, it would be better for me, healthier for me, to get my body back into shape to help with my uterus. It was good for my daughter. I know that sometimes it's not possible, and there's no guilt trip on women who cannot do this. But the point is, again, who's making the choice? They're now at the point where they're making the choice of whether we breastfeed our children or where we don't.
Yeah.
And that's just a line of, you know, it's not your body, it's a corporation's body, because now they're a person, or it's a Supreme Court justice body, and women's health care is going down in this country. More women are dying in childbirth, more infant mortality. So there are no family values, because if there were, they would not be doing this. Period.
Does it seem to you, and I appreciate you making the connection, and the connection is not lost on me either, between this decision and the Supreme Court decision and what we fear is at stake in that Supreme Court decision. Is it too simplistic to say that when the term family values was coined, what it actually was meant to mean was a continuation of patriarchal power?
Yes, because the health is being taken away for all of us. And Christ said, you know, do unto others as you do unto me. This is not Christianity. This is the march to a plutocracy. It is a march that's whatever is best for the corporation, the people's health. That's nothing. Their well-being, nothing overall. What they breathe, that doesn't matter. Sorry, I have allergies from what I breathe.
Well, Brenda,
we
appreciate your call. I don't want to cut you off, but if you're done, go have a glass of water, and thank you so much for calling in.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
You too. Krista from Georgia. There's two from Georgia. I don't know if you knew our previous caller. Maybe you were friends.
I don't know her.
Hello, Krista.
Hi. Good morning, Jeff. I liked your analogy comparing sports to the Republican Party as far as the pick for the Supreme Court. What I need to ask is, why do you think the Democrats are not the same way? And I'm not saying that they should cheat, but what I'm saying is, why are they not as hungry for the goal, it seems, as the Republicans are, and willing to do whatever it takes? They're always the first to compromise. They're always the first to just bow down and just, you know, roll over. Why do you think this is?
All right. I'm so very glad you asked that question. I think the answer to that question is adjacent to, overlapping with, might be tied for the most important strategic and politically moral question that we face. Sort of, why does it seem like Democrats are nicer and not willing to, you know, be crafty all the time?
Yes.
I think they are crafty a lot of the time, but I don't think your impression is inaccurate. I share your impression, at least. I have at least three responses. The first is, it's not two sides. The idea that a discussion of democracy is merely two sides is itself a tool of oppression. It is handy because the majority of human beings are born with two hands and two legs and two eyes and two halves of their brain, and it's easy to divide things into two. But it's actually not how the world works. So I think when we think about it as two sides, we misunderstand what's going on. And I think the media has misunderstood that as well. What has happened is, since Brown versus Board of Education, and even prior to that, there has been a movement. Before that, it was just power. It was just the power of property, the power of wealth, the patriarchy writ large. After Brown versus Board of Education, and I'll plug it again, Democracy in Chains tells the story aptly, a movement was fomented that realized, the Constitution could be used as a tool to make sure democracy happens. We don't want democracy to happen, not if it were to interfere with patriarchal property power. So we better stop that. And they built a movement, and the Koch brothers funded it. And that's not creating a scary story. That's what happened. And so it wasn't two sides. They realized, as their top objective, their top strategic victory, the goal they needed to get, was to take over the Supreme Court. And so it wasn't there was one side that wanted the Supreme Court, or two sides that each wanted the Supreme Court, and they were kind of fighting, and one was willing to fight mean. Another way of looking at it was, there was a movement in the country that took over the Republican Party, and it had a high priority in taking over the Supreme Court, so they built the Federalist Society. There wasn't an alternative to it for decades. And what's happening today is the clear resolution, the clear victory of that movement, a lot that was cast 50 years ago. My other answer is that the movements are different. it is not, to me, the big fights that are going on are not right versus left. Again, I think that's a tool of oppression. That's not me to say people should not join the largest or second largest political party. That could be a wonderful and wonderfully brilliant way to coalesce to try to gain power to fight oppression. But we shouldn't let the way we control our government control our minds.
The Democrats,
go ahead.
The Republicans do it. I mean, the Republicans basically give their followers a choice. It's either, you know, it's either yes or no. Democrats, I believe, just get too into it to where they're given too many choices, and then you can't
corral excellent point.
The people that you need to corral to fight with you.
It's an excellent point. And let me say, as I disassemble, I hope by the end of the show I also assemble, because ultimately you got to build a majority that can govern. And unless you change the system of governance, you have to be able to do that, and you have to be able to make things clear enough so that a big enough team can win and just say, yes, we're together. But let me dwell on this for another moment. I view a more important, a better way of understanding the battle that we face as property versus democracy. This, in fact, is the battle that the better angels won in the Revolutionary War, that the better angels won in the Civil War, that the better angels won in the Civil Rights Movement, that that one team, it's not just right versus left, it's one team is fighting for the preservation of long duration property power. And for them, all this democratic small d mumbo jumbo principles of how decisions could be made, well, those are tools to be used or to be cast aside, because the objective is the holding of power. Another team, these are not the only two teams, but another team cares about the principles of the process. Think in fact, like for me, there's a lot of things I'm not sure of. One of the only things I'm pretty sure of is the people are supposed to be in charge. And because I hold that as a first principle, it means I can be open to persuasion. That is good news. It also can be weak news. It also can make me not as strident. It can make me seem mealy-mouthed from time to time if I consider viewpoints, because I think one of the things we're supposed to do is consider viewpoints. And this is why I don't think we should think of it as merely binary, but if we're going to say two sides, we got to fight for democracy. That said, democracy is a powerful argument. The reason I think we can win over time is because I think the idea that the people are supposed to be in charge is every bit as powerful as any other argument one can offer. And it can start exposing this idea that power of property is something called freedom. No, freedom is a different thing. Freedom is the ability to do stuff, not just control other people doing stuff because you own stuff. So those are a couple answers, because I don't think it's just two sides. The press frames it as two sides because one side has been more, if you want to speak a little more, you know, a little less head in the clouds, I'll try to be maybe more useful in that way, is because Republicans have had as a higher and more fundamental commitment to take over the courts than Democrats have. And
wow.
It is basically that symbol.
That is what I did not want to hear.
And I don't mean Democratic leadership. I mean Democratic media, of which there is precious little. And don't say MSNBC, because I don't think that's what it is. It is not the contraposite to Fox News. It is better than Fox News, but it's not the flip side.
Wow.
It is the Heritage Foundation, the Federalist Society. There has been a movement that has motivated the courts. It's one of the most important reasons Donald Trump was elected. It was a reason that people who considered themselves Christian were willing to go to the polls and encourage other people to go to the polls to elect somebody who so obviously and decidedly was not one. Because they knew that they were going to get their tax cuts, and they knew they were going to get their justices. And if it meant being in cahoots with a foreign adversary, it was worth it, because they've been working at it for 40 years and they had no choice. Just like a successful movie has no choice but to make a sequel because the economics require it. The Republicans were required to elect Donald Trump, because he was going to get them their tax cuts and he was going to get them their justices. I hope that was at least mildly useful. I hope not just too much of a rant.
No, thank you. It was very useful. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Krista. We got time for one more call right now. Ben has been waiting patiently in Milwaukee. Hey, Ben.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I want to talk a little bit about the Supreme Court.
Go ahead.
I just want to start. Thurgood Marshall, the greatest American lawyer and Supreme Court justice ever. Here's what he had to say about the law and interpreting the law. You do what you think is right and let the law catch up. Now, people think this means, like, you know, we just do whatever we want, but that's not what it is. The Democrats when they appoint justices, they've got to start appointing people like Thurgood Marshall, people who are actually going to go out there and support what is right and not listen to all the little minutiae that, you know, is used to get rulings that say that public sector unions are worthless or any of those other insane rulings that we have. The other thing is, if Democrats want to start appointing people to the Supreme Court, they've got to get the edge in the Senate. D.C., Puerto Rico, those can both become states. There's four Democratic senators right there. There's a
Your point, we're about to go to break. Your point is really important, that in 2040, I think 30% of the country is going to control 70% of the Supreme Court seats. I think that's the right ratio, just about that. This is the Tom Hartman Show. Thanks for your calls. Thanks for listening. We're going to be back in a sec.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
This is the Tom Hartman Show. I'm Jeff. New Supreme Court justice picked tonight. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Show. I'm Jefferson Smith sitting in. Honored to do it. Honored to be with you. We're talking Supreme Court. We're talking breastfeeding. In a little bit, we're going to talk about who scholars rank as the worst president of all time. Spoiler alert, you might be able to guess. We also are going to be talking later about would you rather have teachers or robots with guns and practicing shooting, or maybe neither. But right now, we're going to take a call from Lisa on Free Speech TV in Sutherland, Oregon. Hey, Lisa.
Hi, Jeff. Well, thanks for keeping Tom alive.
He's not in danger. His health is fine, I assure you. It's just summer, and he's got a thing he's got to be at, and he'll be with you tomorrow.
Well, keeping his show alive.
There you go. Okay.
You know, I was telling the screener, I don't know where to start, but I think it's really important to emphasize this Supreme Court problem. I read something yesterday. I'm paraphrasing, okay, that if this administration even has the slightest hint of any kind of impropriety or collusion or collaboration, and we have so much evidence. We've got the emoluments clause, and we have, you know, we're waiting on Mueller and so forth, and also collusion with the media, that the entire administration is totally illegitimate, and yep. Every single executive order, every single nomination, every single appointment should be annulled and should be voided. And I believe this from the start. I don't understand why the Democrats are voting on any nomination or anything that this president is doing. Read Malcolm Lance's book, The Plot to Destroy America. I think you're familiar with his work.
Yep.
This will not stand. We cannot, under any circumstances, and let this administration go on any longer for not even one more day. We are in deep, deep, deep trouble.
And this is the Cory, Lisa. This is the Cory Booker point. Not only his point; it's also your point and others. But that a president under this degree of investigation that calls into question not only his fitness for office, but even the fitness of his election, and whether his motives are even in basic comportment with the oath of office, if in fact his first loyalty is to this country. And Jonathan Chait wrote a piece, I think published just last night, was it The New Yorker, that said, just imagine if in the upcoming summit between Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump, that it is not a meeting between world leaders, but a meeting between an agent and his handler, with Putin being the handler. And he lays out the case relatively persuasively with details, all of which are in plain view. There is Malcolm Gladwell in his book, What the Dog Saw, which is a collection of articles, explained a helpful principle, helpful definition. He says there are mysteries and puzzles. Mysteries are stuff we don't know the answer to. Puzzles are things that we just have to piece together. I think this is something we've already pieced together, and there's not much mystery. The question is, will there be the political will to do something about it? And can there be brakes put on? I am saying the only brakes are going to be have to put on by the people and over time. Thank you for your call, Lisa. You're listening to Tom Hartman Show. You also might be watching it because there's cameras here and I'm looking at one of them. I'm Jefferson Smith. In case you were looking at me and I didn't look very much like Tom Hartman, we have vaguely the same shape. We're both human beings. I will fill in his shoes or at least his chair as best I can. And thank you for filling in your chair and being a part of this show, because as I have said before, I do not view this as a transaction. I view this as a community building, movement building exercise. And if you are not part of that, then I am of almost no moment or purpose at all. Yolanda has been waiting, wants to talk about mother's milk. Yolanda in Washington. Washington, D.C. or Washington State?
No, Washington State.
All right. What town?
Oh, well, you know, you have to think about mother's milk. That's the simplest way to take care of your infant immediately and bond and all the antibodies and all that good stuff. But there's a scare right now, pardon the expression, with white America that there's not, that we're taking over all people of color and all this. This is a great way to stop poor people from keeping their children alive.
Yeah.
Because modern medicine says don't feed your babies that way. It ruins your body. And it's not true. And we are the number one of the richest countries in the world. And what? We have the highest birth mortality. There's something wrong with that picture.
Amen. Amen.
Definitely something wrong with that picture.
Appreciate it. We're going to go to Jesse. Listen on Free Speech TV in Miami. How you doing, Jesse?
Hey, hi, Jeff. Hey, two relevant questions to, you know, about the mother's breast milk and the Supreme Court nominee. When do you think a law is made to be broken?
That's a good question. The moral, I wish I could cite the best philosopher, but my mind is escaping me, who has made this point. But Martin Luther King Jr. certainly made the point that you violate a law if it is unjust and you make a moral stand and are willing to accept the consequences to follow a higher purpose.
I would agree with that.
All right. Well, appreciate your call.
Thanks.
Thank you, Jesse. We've got Jennifer. Jennifer in Stillwater. I think you want to make the same point my dad makes. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah. Excuse my cold. If I sound funny, I have a really bad cold.
You sound great, and I have no idea how you normally sound.
Okay. I was just going to make the point that I'm in Minnesota, and across the border in Wisconsin about 8 years ago or so, the Democrats in Madison, Wisconsin, they just fled across the border to Illinois.
Yeah, I remember.
Because, yeah, they were...
to deny quorum.
Yeah, Scott Walker and the Republicans in the legislature ramming everything through, and they just denied them a quorum. And, you know, considering that we do have a finite time, we only have to deny them a quorum through, you know, the election, the midterm election. So there's only a few months. So couldn't the Democrats in the U.S. Senate just flee back to their home states, or just go across the border to Virginia?
It's a good question. Yeah. We're about to go to break. Let me give you a very quick answer. My first answer is I want to brush up on my Senate rules on quorum calls, but I think they can send out federal marshals and require people by arrest or otherwise. And yeah, they could hide. And in the example you gave, I remember, I think they were hiding in motels.
Yeah, they they hid in rural Illinois and they fled to Chicago.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think they would probably get caught. And then as we play it out, as you know, think about a few moves ahead. What does that do to voter turnout in the midterm elections? Does it actually block a Supreme Court justice? I'm not saying I disagree, but I'd want to play it out. And in just a minute after the break, we're going to be talking to somebody about the court. And I'm going to ask your question. And thank you for calling in, Jennifer. This is the Tom Hartman Show. I'm Jeff.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.